so we know.
Let's do it. All right. Welcome into the Barking Out Loud podcast. My name is Perry Wagner. I'm here with Jake Bedell. Jake, how you doing today?
Doing good, man. Doing good.
We're here to talk some Butler basketball. It is a Wednesday morning. Tonight, the Bulldogs take on Xavier. But first, we want to talk a little bit about the Marquette loss on Sunday. Jake, the team lost 57-76. Break it down for me a little bit.
Yeah, it was a tough loss. I mean, they're not exactly getting that support from the bench that they were really hoping to. I mean, Baldwin, he had 23 points in this matchup, and he had a little bit of late foul trouble that he was trying to battle through, but he's not going to be able to get it done by himself. I mean, Bryce Enzi was coming in. He had 14 points and 5 rebounds, so he was able to go about, you know, getting the ball to the places where it needed to be and finding some space underneath the basket. But you look at the rest of the roster, and they're just not putting up the point totals that you would really, really hope for, especially against a team like that on the road. I mean, you need to have everybody on their A game. Marcus Howard held to 17 points, and somehow that's his fewest in Big East play, which blows my mind, because that's a pretty good, that's like a, you know, pretty decent performance and outing from most Big East players for as him. That's something that he would want to build on. He did have Kobe McEwen came on in support. He had 16 points. So Marquette was just getting the support that they needed. Butler wasn't. I mean, that was what it comes down to. I mean, I give credit to the Golden Eagles. Their defense was on it that game, and especially having it as a – I think they had something called, like, National Marquette Day that day, something like that.
A friend of mine, they should have that every game day.
Because it clearly did stuff for them. I mean, having all the students and the alumni there in order to celebrate for that game, I mean, the environment in that building must have been awesome. So they need to do that continuously. I wish we could do that at Hinkle.
Yeah, one thing that I see is, like, so Sean McDermott goes 0-for-5. The last time that the Bulldogs got blown out by this much was that Villanova game on the road.
Yeah.
Where he struggled mightily. It seems like maybe it's once a week, maybe it's every 2 weeks. Sean just doesn't have it. And when he can't hit the three, there's not a whole lot else he can do. So he had 2 points. I don't know if you've mentioned this, but Aaron Thompson only had 4 points. Talk to me about his importance to the team, and getting him back from the wrist injury is important. But we talked earlier that there could be some things that he has yet to do since coming back that he needs to do for the Bulldogs to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it beforehand. So when he came back for that Villanova game, I'm not sure that everybody anticipated him being 100%, but I feel like Aaron's like, no, I'm not missing a home Villanova game. We lost the first one. We need to win the second one. And so he was, and the reason they were able to perform so well is that, I mean, he personally doesn't contribute to, like, in terms of shooting wise, the 3-point ball. I mean, he doesn't take hardly any threes.
Right. If he's open, it's got to be end of the shot clock for him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so having him there to, but he's a field general. He's the one who's creating movement with the defense and allowing players to find their own spacing in order to get open. And that's what opens up space beyond the arc for Kamar and Sean being able to take shots from range. Jordan Tucker, when he gets opportunities. And when he's able to, when he's on the floor, everybody, I feel like, comes out and feels more confident about their approach to their scoring strategy and the way they can go about doing things. And so when he's out there, everything just kind of seems to kind of mold together. He wasn't on one in this Marquette game. I mean, as you mentioned, he had very few scoring opportunities. He had those assists, which means he was setting up plays, but I'm a bit concerned that he's not at 100% ever since coming back. I had heard some rumors that it was something along the lines of just some, like, discomfort in the wrist, not so much an injury to it, but that it would be to where a point where he just kind of has to, you know, get through it. Maybe it's just, you know, some strain, like, in his hand. So not quite sure what the exact injury is. They haven't really disclosed. They've kept it pretty disclosed, but the concern is that he's not at 100%.
Yeah, another thing that I'm looking at is the bench play. I think a lot of people thought that Jordan Tucker moving back to the bench would give the bench a little more depth, a little more potential to come in and make some waves when the starters go out. But if you look at it, he's the only player that made a shot. He goes 3-for-12, 1-for-6 from three, and there's a whole bunch of goose eggs. Out of the players that do play off the bench, so we're looking at Derek Smith, Caleb Battle, and Henry Badley, out of those three, along with Tucker, who do you think moving forward the rest of the season can be that other spark plug off the bench.
I was hoping to see it from Tucker. Earlier on in the season, especially once Aaron had that injury, Tucker emerged earlier on when he's doing well as that sixth man that Butler needs off the bench in order to put up continuous point totals and contributing offensively. He was the type of person that they needed to step up. And, I mean, he has some off games here and there where he's not putting up his point totals that he would like to. But in that case, then I was hoping to see a little bit more of Henry Badley. When Henry Badley came onto the scene and we had a little bit more playing minutes, I think he's an exciting player to watch. Yep. I like watching Badley. Part of it is his spunk and how he goes about his play offensively. But how he is on defense is phenomenal. Right. The way he's able to guard players like, in that Marquette game, Marcus Howard, and he's able to stay with them, prevent people from driving to the lane. And so that's the sort of player that you need on the floor. He wasn't contributing as much on the offensive end as of late, which was kind of game against Marquette. He only played 7 minutes in that matchup, which was a little bit of a surprising coaching decision.
In those 7 minutes, so it's like,
yeah,
if you were to play a little more, maybe get some points on the board, a couple more.
When, like, the Golden Eagles have players like Marcus Howard and Kobe McEwen and Brendan Bailey who are each putting up 15-plus points in the game, You're expecting somebody expecting the coaching staff to make a move in order to lock them down defensively and try to figure things out. And with him being such a good defender, you have to kind of weigh the pros and the cons in terms of, what you're trying to do. I imagine, they were trailing for much of this game, and This wasn't a great performance from the Bulldogs. And so, because of the fact that they were trailing, Coach LaValle is looking, Jordan's looking at this and says, okay, we need people to contribute offensively. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to offense,
not a playmaker for himself. So let's wrap that game up. Let's move on. First matchup of the year against the Musketeers. It's shaping up to be a big game, Jake. I think a lot of people underrate Xavier. They're just one game back of us in the Big East. Mm-hmm. They've won three straight. They beat Seton Hall on the road by double digits. They beat DePaul on the road, which is something that we didn't do. And they beat Providence at home, which is something we didn't do. Three straight games. Let's look at this game a little bit. Let's preview it because it is a big one. It's a rivalry game. What do you see are some potential places that the Bulldogs can improve on that Marquette loss to get the win against Xavier?
Well, Xavier's on this three-game win streak, which is really intriguing to me. I think that Xavier has been kind of under the radar so far this season. They haven't been great, but they haven't been bad either. They're just kind of like in the mix, and mm-hmm. I feel as though they haven't really been talked about. I want to point out, I don't think that they've had the same reputation ever since Chris Mack went to Louisville. I think how he went about recruiting things and the wonders that he did for Xavier were phenomenal. They did pretty well for themselves. I mean, a couple of years, not too long ago, in the March Madness tournament. And so the people that he was able to bring in was really, really well done. But ever since he left for Louisville, I feel like they've been kind of flying just under the radar. Yep. They've still been able to put together some good seasons.
A lot like Butler with when Chris Holtman left.
Exactly.
It took a while, and I think a lot of people still think it's kind of in his transition phase, kind of growing back up with LaValle Jordan. But with Chris Steele coming as an assistant and getting the head coaching job, it's gonna take some time, and you're gonna have to build that recruiting base up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're sitting at 5-6 in conference play, 16-8 overall. So they've done a nice job as to kind of performing in non-conference play before they were able to get into the heat of the Big East. I mean, and the Big East is just a competitive conference by nature. I mean, basketball in general, if you're building March Madness brackets, you might as well just burn it right away because
the way
college basketball has been going this season has been it's been an incredible show to watch in terms of teams beating one another. You look at the Big Ten. Some of the teams that started off on such a hot streak are now at the very bottom of the Big Ten standings.
Yeah.
But in terms of
Ohio State.
Yeah, Ohio State just went on a 6-game losing streak at some point. I mean,
they were top three.
Yeah, exactly. It's insane. And then looking at the Big East, I mean, anybody has the capabilities to beat anybody. I mean, everyone was talking about early on through non-conference play the renaissance, the DePaul basketball, how well that they were doing for themselves.
Yeah, how's that look so far?
They're 1-10 in conference play right now. Yeah. So So you haven't heard a whole lot from them as of late. The things just have been so competitive. Anybody on any given day can beat another team, and it's the reason why you have to play so cautiously. I admire the work that Seton Hall has been able to do so far. 10-1 in the Big East and 18-5 overall.
Really set this themselves in another tier versus all the other
Yeah, 100%.
Teams.
This is a potential, like, if not Elite Eight, like, Final Four team. Like, this is this is a really competitive basketball team, and a team that everybody's going to have to keep their eyes on. But yeah, as far as the Xavier matchup tonight, this is something that Butler needs to win. You've got two home games this week. You've got Xavier tonight and then Georgetown later on Saturday. These are the sort of things that you need in order to capitalize and get back up in the standings. You've only won three of your last eight games. Something's got to happen, and what better place to do it against your rival at home?
A 2-0 week is something that I've been wanting for a while now. It seems like they either win the first game in the week and then lose the weekend game, or they lose the weekday game and win the weekend game. And that, it doesn't, you know, depending on the wins, it doesn't necessarily hurt you, because maybe you're getting one quality win and then somewhat of a quality loss, maybe on the road against a pretty good Big East team. But yeah, this late in the season, going 2-0 in a week, in as quality of a conference as the Big East is really important. And so I want to talk to you a little bit about the 16 teams that came out. The NCAA released their first look at who would be the top 16 seeds, 1 through 4, in each side of the bracket. If the tournament started today, then the ones, Baylor, Kansas, Gonzaga, San Diego State, and if you flash, the other Big East team before you get to Butler is Seton Hall as a 3 seed, and then there's Butler as a 4 seed, along with Auburn, Michigan State, and Oregon.
In terms of, like, their early season projections, and with the March Madness, competitive basketball teams that Butler is going to have to manage if they're playing in the same division of them come full tournament at season's end. So we'll have to see how that changes. That loss to Marquette, that might change things. It did come out before that Sunday matchup, and so factor that into the discussion. It'll kind of depend on what their performance is at home. If they fall out of that top 16, there's the potential that they could be looking at maybe even moving to another division, but the top four or in each division this year is scary. There's a lot of competitive teams. What's interesting to me is when you look at some of the poll comparisons that Butler has been put into. They're in both the net rankings and the AP poll. They're not in the Power 36, so that is kind of interesting to me, for the sake that they're not in the top of discussion in terms of the strongest schedules that they've had so far this season. Their KenPom rankings have been a little bit fluctuant throughout the season. So, but they've been consistently inside the AP top 25, and I think that, you know, with wins potentially coming out of this week, I would expect them to maybe move up a little bit further. But they need to have a decisive victory over both Xavier and Georgetown this week in order to do so. Quick interesting stat with that metric that we talked about with those 16 teams that got in. Of the top 8 teams, now one of them did have a bye week. I quite forget what it was, which team it was, but one of them had a bye week. So of the 7 games that took place, they went 7-0 of those top 8 teams. The lower half of that, so teams 9 through 16, went 3-5 this past week.
Wow.
And so, I mean, we had talked about how crazy basketball, college basketball was this season. But if that's not a testament to that, I mean, you look at some of these teams that had, you know, losses this past week. I mean, Illinois had a tough game against Maryland. Everybody can beat anybody on any given day, as I mentioned earlier. And so you shouldn't be super concerned if they lose a game here and there. Fans shouldn't be concerned. I mean, it's just the nature of basketball this season. It's just the competition of it has been at a peak ever since, I would say, like, probably all the way back in November. As soon as, like, conference play, I mean, you hear about these top-tier teams that are just going down to in-conference opponents.
Yeah.
I mean, Duke lost at home against Clemson this season.
Right, right. Clemson.
Which was crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it was unfathomable up until that point. And once you see it happen, you're like, okay, this is how things are going to go from here on out.
It just shows, the top – you know, you look at, like, the college football ranking, and a lot of the times when they reveal the playoff rankings every week, the top teams play each other, and then it might shift it. But here you look at, like you said, a lot of those shift quite a bit week in, week out.
You talk about like college football, like college football comparisons. I mean, the first thing that I think of is, at least in college football, the Pac-12 is one of the conferences that's continuously in competition with one another. I mean, you only have a set amount of games in the season to where you can make yourself stand out in the top 25 rankings or in the college football playoff rankings. And that division is, or that conference is so competitive when it comes to football, it almost forces, it almost makes it a bit very difficult for any of them to reach those top four teams come college football playoff time, because they play each other so well. College basketball, it's a very, very different story. Yeah. I mean, you look at the Big East, you know, the Big East this season, and, you know, everybody's playing each other so competitively. Everybody has the chance to get to the March Madness tournament. Mm-hmm. I want to say that there's six teams that are in the Big East that are in the conversation for March Madness discussion between Seton Hall, Villanova, Creighton, us, and then Marquette. Providence, I think, Providence is tied with us as of right now in the conference rankings, but I don't think they're quite in the discussion.
Yeah, they're going to have to do some good things in the Big East tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you look at it like, okay, so if you take the number one overall seed, which is four seed, that's us. That's Butler. And so you look at it and you go, well, could Butler beat Baylor?
Game. We got close, and it was on the road, too. I want to say that was when – I think that was before Baylor was playing their best basketball, mm-hmm. and I think they've come a long way as a team since that matchup took place. But at the same time, Butler isn't the same team that they were in non-conference play. I think some things that we had seen earlier on in the season, whether that be with some players that weren't getting as much playing or that aren't getting as much playing time now, Caleb Battle hasn't been seeing as many minutes, but you kind of got a glimpse as to who he's going to become as a player in those non-conference games, especially against ones that we would blow out opponents.
Right, he'd come in.
Yeah, and he would really be able to kind of show off his skills. That Purdue matchup that we had, I mean, looking at where Purdue is now, they're a competitive basketball team.
Yeah, it was a good win.
Yeah, against. And so I think that, you know, seeing how the teams have morphed over the duration of the season into what we see now, I think is something that's been interesting to see.
That was, like, if you look at the college football to compare it, like, the number one ranking, LSU, if you measured up against the 16th team, which is Iowa – like that is a 30 or 40 point blowout.
It's a drastic change,
Which I think is why people love college basketball and always will, is because there's so much parity and so much unpredictability, in it. So Jake, before we wrap up, any final thoughts on today's game against Xavier, or Georgetown, or anything else looking forward?
I just think that, as we mentioned with the Marquette game, our bench didn't quite put up the performance numbers that we were hoping that they would, and I think that's the thing that's going to make the difference in this one. Obviously, the environment is going to be hostile this evening. The student section has been chanting some phrases for the entire semester.
Right, revving up.
For whenever, getting ready for this matchup. Yeah. And so now that it's finally here, I think that everybody's going to be fired up and ready to go. With as close as these two teams are in the conference standings, I think both teams are aware as to what this game means moving forward and what this is going to set as a pretext for the matchup that Xavier is going to be home. So, you know, whether one team is going to, one team is going to win tonight, one team is going to lose tonight, and then it's going to be up to them to figure out how to, either flip or keep the script once the matchup shifts over to Cincinnati. So it should be a fun one.
Right. We're 6-5 in conference play. The Butler Bulldogs are, and Xavier is 5-6. So this is a big game for the regular season Big East, and it's a big game for seeding in the Big East Conference Tournament and also for the NCAA Tournament. So, Jake, thanks for joining me today. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, absolutely.
This has been the Barking Out Loud podcast. Join us again next week for more Butler basketball content. Have a good day, guys.